This is a previously recorded episode of the IT in the D Show.
Welcome. We are back broadcasting here live at Comerica Park, home of the Detroit Tigers. This is the IT in the D Show special edition from TEDx Detroit, which is going on across the street. We get a beautiful view of the ballpark where the Tigers aren't playing anymore because they're not in the playoffs.
That's okay, but we have a nice breeze.
We have a great breeze.
Trapped inside, haha.
And we are hanging out with none other than Dave Meeker. He's the VP of R&D and Innovation at Isobar.
Isobar.
So talk to me. What is... I knew Isobar from the Weather Channel. I don't know. Yeah, what is so it?
An ice bar is the, weather, is the collision of two weather fronts.
Correct.
I would like to think the metaphor is that an isobar is also the collision of technology and creativity. We are a digital agency. We do a lot of work for GM here in Detroit. But when I say digital agency, I don't want you to think ad agency so much, but more how do we take digital-focused product and service design. We do some digital online advertising and such, but my team is really focused on how do we take a bunch of technology that's emerging, right? Things have been moving really fast the last few years.
Right.
And mix that with problem solving to apply things in a new way. So I think that's what the word innovation, which is, I think, really overused, really is like, how do we reapply things and connect dots? And I've connected a dot, which I think people in Detroit will be really interested about.
So we'll get to that in a minute. I want to talk, like, just let's get into cars real quick, because sure. I have a 2013 car, and I thought I liked it until I saw the technology coming out in the 16s and 17s.
Yeah.
You know, and we all know the connected vehicle is the next thing, and self-driving is the thing after that.
Yep.
What's kind of flying under the radar that's a kind of like a wow thing coming out with the cars? Is there something?
I mean, I think longer term, the biggest challenge that the automotive manufacturers have is, A, they want to extend... technology needs to be safe, right?
Sure.
With driving. We've seen what happened in recent months. I don't think the Tesla situation is really Tesla's fault necessarily. It was sort of a misuse of a... autonomous system.
Right.
But I think autonomy is coming. I think the biggest thing flying under the radar is the conversation we have in 20 years on what do I do with my classic car now that, like, everybody has batteries and I'm not buying gas
because
where do I get gas? But I think autonomy and smart vehicles, this idea, you know, screens are getting cheaper, processors are getting faster, experiences are becoming more expected. So what's that backseat experience like for kids on a road trip, I think, is a really interesting question.
I was going to say, gone are the days, you know, when we were kids where, you know, you
the alphabet the, game.
You sat in the backseat that
punch
faced
bug.
Backwards and, you know, made fun of the, like, made faces at the front behind you.
With a shoebox full of Star Wars figures, you know.
Yeah, no, now there's Wi-Fi and movies and two screens, and it's insane.
Yeah, I mean, Lockheed Martin recently did this thing, the Magic School Bus, which is a sort of a VR experiment where they took a school bus. They plastered the walls or the windows of the school bus with LED screens, and they loaded a VR app up, so now what you on the school bus feels like you're driving through Mars.
That was the old TV show, The Magic School Bus.
That's what I thought. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Miss Frizzle.
Right.
Miss Frizzle. Yeah. The weirdest teacher anyone's ever had.
I grew up in New Hampshire, and we had some...
So your talk is later on this afternoon.
3:10.
3:10. So I guess what...
Oddly specific.
Obviously, you're probably going to be talking about innovation in the automotive, but I mean...
No.
Let's get down to what you're talking about.
So here's the deal. Here's the backstory. I was on... I live in Chicago now. Chicago Architectural Tour. There's this fact of Chicago that after the Chicago fire, the city of Chicago dumps all the remnants of these buildings into the lake. Right? So we made land out of lake. This happens all the time. Lower Manhattan's the same way. Amsterdam's, right? We do this as human beings. But I didn't really understand the scale of it. So I'm sitting in my conference room, looking out the window, talking to a team about virtual reality. We're doing a bunch of VR stuff these days. And it hit me, like, the project is we're going to recreate physical spaces for a client in VR. So I look out the window, and I just had this thought. Not paying attention to my meeting, of course. How much land was dumped or created out of the lake? So I start to look on maps and I think, my God, like it's three times the size of downtown Detroit over time. So is there a better way to visualize that? Because I never really connected those dots before. Using VR is an interesting way to do that. Today we capture pictures. We're using photography. We can draw, we can illustrate, we can paint. But I never really get full context about what I'm looking at or what was around it, or I don't really feel empathetic towards what's in the photograph. The project we're working on is for Wyndham, worldwide, and it's taking some of the resort spaces and using laser scanners and a lot of like 3D modeling stuff and recreating these things so it looks like you're in these places. But there's this technology that I came across called photogrammetry, which is created by map makers, because you got to think back when we could get up in the air, map making like was fundamentally transformed, like, oh my God, I can see it from above, so now I don't. And photogrammetry is this idea of measuring spaces using aerial photography. So what if we took aerial photography and the 3D data that is created by cartographers and this idea of photogrammetry and combine that with VR? So there's software now. I don't have an airplane or a giant camera, but I do have a drone. And so there's drone pilots all over the world, less in the U.S. because of regulations and people think you're either spying on them or going to drop poison on them.
Right,
or
right. Or deliver me an Amazon package.
Well, it's coming too.
Just bring me a pizza.
Or 7-Eleven coffee. That's new.
I always thought worms while I was fishing on some remote lake would be a great delivery.
Oh, nice.
Right.
So anyway, I reach out to some of these guys who've created these 3D models. I go out, create some 3D models. We put them into VR. And lo and behold, like, now I can look at this model like I'm God looking down on this little thing, and I click my remote control, I want to go right there, and wham, I am now in this 3D model. It's amazing. It's transformative.
Now, are you sitting in, like, a garage? Is that, like, no. I'm envisioning what the process, or the what...
So...
You know what I'm talking about, like a box-like garage where everything's surrounding you?
No,
have goggles on.
Goggles, like a headset.
Okay.
So I'm using specifically the HTC Vive platform, which is room-scale VR, which means it's got two of these little lighthouse things you hang on the walls. I can walk around like a 10-foot by 10-foot space, and I walk around in the VR space. To move further than that, I have a teleporting control. So I hit a button, and it sort of shows an arc.
Gotcha.
Lands, and I can jump to that spot. So now I can jump around and walk around these 3D models. For the sake of education, like I have little kids. I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. I put the headset on them, and I show them, and wow, Dad! You know, so you get this visceral reaction of, this is really different. And it doesn't cost $300,000 to recreate a space.
Right.
You can buy a used Phantom 2 drone on eBay for $200-$300, put an SD card in it, download software for $20, and fly over the stadium. 6 hours later, I have a 3D model of this stadium. It's not perfect. Like, it's not the same quality you're going to get from CGI effects, but it's good enough.
I don't think it needs to be
perfect.
Right. I mean, you think about just applications like in real estate, for example. Like, hey, how about I just come to your kitchen table and we look at 15 houses in 20 minutes, and you know what I mean? And then we'll...
So agreed. Check this out. There's a couple places. There's a company in Paris that's going to Palmyra in Syria. They're going to Afghanistan. They're scanning these culturally relevant places that maybe be destroyed because of war, but there's no record of them. Like, how wide were they? How big were they?
Right.
So they're preserving that kind of stuff. Other countries, they're using drones after like hurricanes or storms to look at, like, what's the roof of the church like? Who wants to climb up on the roof of the church? Let's fly the drone up there. But we can now see in detail, like, the structural differences.
Right.
Here in Detroit, somebody said to me, well, how do you apply to Detroit? And they're like, we should go one night. We'll go out to the Packard plant. And I'm like, more of that, right?
Right.
Like, we know that the Packard plant is really interesting. We know it's interesting to look at and think about what that means from a historical perspective. But what about preserving the things that we do have? So in the course of looking around Detroit, we could go to Belle Island. But we're taking care of that stuff, right? It's not in danger of leaving. So a few weeks ago, the Heidelberg Project announces that they're going to go through this transition, and they're going to start deconstructing the things that are there today and turning that into something new. So I reached out to the Heidelberg Project and said, I want to do these experiments with you to see what we could do to capture what you have today. Because there's houses that have been victims to arson, right?
Sure.
The place has changed over time. If I could have done this 5 years ago, I could go visit the animal house and this obstruction of justice house that are no longer there.
Right.
And so now they've got a capital campaign going on with this thing called the Numbers House, because it has structural damage. It acts as their primary center for education when kids come mm-hmm. from all over the world. I mean, it's the third largest tourist attraction, from what I understand, in the city. Right, which is crazy,
right?
And it's just public art thing. And so as they go to structurally repair things, how can we digitally capture this so that in 3 or 5 years there's a record of it? And potentially and then we go to real 3D modeling and work backwards. What if we could create what it was like 15 or 20 years ago?
Right.
So it's this really interesting blend of technology and creativity coming together to solve a societal problem, which I think is cool. And then it's this, what I find most interesting about it is map maker guys who invented photogrammetry, probably working for the Air Force or something, and the VR guys who are like, we're going to go for gaming, we're going to make maps. Let's put the drone manufacturers thinking about, we're going to go for the market of photographers. You mix all these three things together, and all of a sudden you have like what it could be an educational solution that scales really well. And is it's, I'll tell you.
Well, you talk about just even like from a teaching, we all three of us have little kids, right?
Yeah.
And just saying, hey, let's go to Egypt.
Exactly.
And everybody put your thing on, and it just changes how you teach, not just geography, but history, but
it could be anything. And
right.
It's this, and like I'll say, so VR, this is like the year for VR, and a lot of people haven't yet dipped their toes into this stuff. It's amazing. What Google's doing on a smaller scale is pretty cool. You know, it's they've this new platform that they have within his new Pixel phone. It's a headset you hold up. And you can do more, like, there's a lot of 360 video examples and looking around. But the room scale and, like, what will become what we're calling, referring to as, like, world scale.
So, gotcha.
Like, I could go anywhere. I could, you know, it's the augmented reality stuff. You guys have probably seen Microsoft HoloLens or this Magic Leap company. Like, I want to take a Chevy Corvette and put it right there. It's digital. I put this thing on and there... projects down on. I mean, it is. I can walk around it. It looks and doesn't feel real, but that may be next. But
I always thought that's a cool application for like stationary bikes at the gym.
Yeah.
Like I want to go. I want to ride my bike through downtown Paris.
Totally.
Strap this thing on and just start pedaling and.
Totally.
You know.
People are hung up a little bit on. So I think the biggest problem right now is perception. Drones, like you're doing, right. If you're up to something, if you have a drone. And then VR, people.
I'm one of
like,
those people.
It's like the Matrix. Well, and it's funny too, because with the drone stuff, 2 or 3 years ago, people in our industry were like, you know, drones. And I'm like, well, I don't know what that has to do with what we do. It's an interesting consumer technology, but we need to stop talking about drones because they're basically flying cameras, and unless you're shooting commercials, I don't get it.
I saw on ESPN2 yesterday there was the U.S. Drone Racing Championship.
Oh. Like, if you haven't witnessed it, it's pretty amazing because and totally different kinds of drones, but they're a little fast and I would probably crash those.
Just in it's amazing.
They're amazing. When they go like 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're starting to do it in like abandoned warehouses and things.
Right.
Like full on races.
One of the 4K demos that's out there is
the drone race.
The drone race that they did through a warehouse and through cars.
Yeah.
And crazy, crazy stuff.
Yikes.
I would not last 30 seconds.
No, that would be in the, it would be in the lake as quick
crashed,
as...
Crashed it. All right.
It's like me golfing. It's going to be in the lake as if there's a lake there.
So that's kind of the gist.
Awesome. So like, where do we find out more about you? And again, the talk's at 3:10 for those that are listening live. But where do we find out more you and what's going on with VR?
So, okay. Isobar.com, find out company information. DaveMeeker.com, which is, you know, I have this domain website, but it probably hasn't been updated in 6 months, so don't judge me.
Plumber's House, Leaky Pipes. We all,
Heidelberg.org to find out what's going on with that. And then we're probably going to start posting regular kind of updates. This is not about us. This is not about individuals. This is really about Detroit and how can the entire community start to get involved and influence what the next 20 or 30 years of Heidelberg looks like as... I mean, they've persevered, man. If there's a story of perseverance in this town, still there.
Right.
Still making art. And so I guess it's more like, let's all come together around that, because it's a really interesting story, and we often overlook the things that are obvious to us or in front of us. When I talked about people in other countries about this, they light up. Oh, my God. The Heidelberg Project is amazing, you know, and it's really, really important.
Yeah, and here it's like, meh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, people, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, we have that thing. And you're like, yeah, that thing's really special.
Yeah.
You know? And not just because of the art, which is great, but it's the kind of this rebellious story of we're going to do this and we're not going to back down. which is very much in the spirit of Detroit.
Well, it reminds me of what brewers are doing with everyone has a little say-so in how the beer's made,
yep.
The collaboration, and kind of Heidelberg was kind of like everyone had their hands in it,
exactly.
So everyone has a little stake of ownership and exactly. pride into it. So,
and the other thing, I mean, the last thing I'll leave you with is when you start to find new technologies that we, our generation, may not understand as well, right, embrace them to some degree, realize that we don't know everything and that things are going to change. This happened when radio hit. When TV hit, the radio people were like, oh, it's going to poison
your
brain, right?
With this.
Yeah, and so it's just another step of an evolution. So get behind it, support it. You don't need to, like, jump in, but at least tip your toes in the water of what I'm calling sort of these unintended innovations. And before we make laws or restrict the practice of some of this stuff, let's think through, with drones as an example, let's just give people a pathway so they could go capture something instead of just saying no.
Right.
I made a joke yesterday over there, like, we're going to take the drone out of the bag, we're going to put the batteries in, we're going to launch this thing, and 4 minutes later the cops are going to show up, and it will be the first time the cops have shown up over here
inside of 4 minutes, yeah.
Right?
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Because what are you guys doing? And it's like, but, so.
Very cool.
Just awareness, man.
But hey, Dave Meeker, Isobar, appreciate the time. Best of luck on stage.
Thanks.
There's only going to be, what, 2,000 people staring at you.
Just
so
a
I
lot
mean.
Of people. Great.
This is a previously recorded episode of the IT and the D Show.